This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting from the Clark Auditorium at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. In January 2006, a roadside bomb severely injured Bob Woodruff of ABC News while he was traveling with the Iraqi army near Taji in Iraq. The blast shattered Woodruff's skull and rocks tore into his face and throat. After receiving emergency medical care, Woodruff was transferred here to the National Naval Medical Center to receive treatment for traumatic brain injury, also known as TBI. According to his doctors, Woodruff's unusually speedy recovery is proof of how much we don't know about the treatment and effects of TBI. In the past, most traumatic brain injuries came from car crashes and from sports injuries. These days, combat medics are able to save the lives of troops with severe brain damage, and many more who weren't hit by bullets or shrapnel still suffer from the effects of blasts. In the years to come, more and more soldiers and Marines and sailors with TBI will enter the military and VA medical systems. A lot of the time, these injuries are hard to diagnose, and while this facility has pioneered treatment for TBI, many others don't have as much experience or specialized training. In just a moment, we'll speak with Bob Woodruff and with one of his doctors. There are patients and medical staff here with us in the Clark Auditorium to share their experiences, and we invite TBI survivors and their families listening to join us as well. Are you getting the care you need? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. With his wife, Lee, ABC News correspondent Bob Woodruff wrote a book called In an Instant, A Family's Journey of Love and Healing. He's with us here at the National Naval Medical Center. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Neil. It's great to be here.
And what's it like to come back to Bethesda?
Well, you know, so many memories now. I'm seeing some of the people around me. It's the doctors, the nurses, the admirals, generals, colonels, everyone around here that have, you know, helped save my life, really, and take care of my families that they're trying to take care of me as well.
When you first came here, did you imagine that you'd be back on the air doing reports from Cuba just the other day?
No, I think this has gone much faster, I think, than most people really thought.
And how far back are you, all the way?
No, I think you ask the doctors, they'll tell you it's never going to be 100% return the way you were before. I mean, it's a lot better than I thought. There's moments where I still can't remember a lot of words. Here and there, but less and less every day. And there used to be a time when they said this improvement going about a year and a half, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now they really say it's more like decades.
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 And since then, in your reporting and also in your personal life and in your book, in a way you've become the poster boy of this injury.
Well, you know, this one of the most important things to us as a family generally is to try to improve the kind of help that we've gotten that so many are getting. And certainly in the early parts, the surgeries that you needed, the medical aspects early on, I mean, this military is now advanced as have ever been in any war before. It's just further down the road when people get out and have to go back to their home and get some help. That needs to be improved because we've got so many new kinds of injuries than we saw in previous wars.
Mm. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes, but I wanted to ask you a little bit. Do you still do exercises? Do you still do, is there therapy that you need to do?
You know, exercising I should do more generally for my health, but I wish I did more because physical, I don't really have a major physical problem. Mm. It's much more mental.
Mental. And are there exercises you do for that?
Well, I've been doing rehabilitation. I've been doing like OT, things like that with doctors. But now I've, to some degree, a lot of my rehabilitation is just doing like this with you,
mm-hmm.
Neil, and just talk to you and do interviews, ask people questions, think about, read a lot more, write a lot more. And even that is a kind of rehabilitation as well.
From reading your book and from watching your special, I know that what happened to you was highly dependent on what side of your head was hit, where the injury actually happened to you.
Yeah, what they say is, since I got largely hit on the left side, that's words and names, problems, languages. If I'd hit on the right side, like a lot of others have too, you'd be a little bit more physical. You know, your movement of your arms and legs, your ability of vision, seeing the distance away, it's something you're trying to touch. So it's a little bit slightly different. And everybody that gets injured like this and gets near an IED, for example, is different kinds of injuries. And really, everybody needs to be looked at.
And people's personalities can change, too.
That's right. I mean, there's PTSD. You could have kind of depression. Some of those I've escaped. But everybody's got a different reaction to this.
You got incredible treatment in part because when you were injured, they treated you as if you were an injured soldier.
Well, certainly in the medical aspect, I was treated just like military guys. When I came out of where we were hit, we were flown away in a helicopter down to Baghdad, up to Balad, and then up to Longstuhl up in Germany. All of that, and then back here to the United States, and here in Bethesda Naval, which is really one of the best hospitals for this kind of injury in the world. And that was all exactly what the other military guys are getting. Mm-hmm. What happens ultimately down the road? You know, I had the choice. I could go to the VA or I could go to a private hospital, and I had that ability to make that decision. That's certainly something that everybody needs to have the ability to do.
You also spoke with a lot of other young men who've suffered from TBI. How does their experience compare with yours, do you think?
It really depends on many. I mean, obviously, I've met some people that have been hit and been near an IED and are better off than me, but it's actually a relatively small number. There's a lot of others that have taken longer time to get through it. And there's some cases where people can't move their arms and legs, they can't speak, they can't, you're not even sure if they can even understand what's going on around them, and have lost parts of their brains. There's a huge different type of those injuries.
We're speaking with Bob Woodruff of ABC News. If you'd like to join the conversation about TBI, traumatic brain injury, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org, and let's see if we can begin with Brian. Brian's with us on the line from Toledo.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Woodruff, I have to say, I saw most of your special on TV, and it was just incredible. I was so surprised what they were able to do for you. It's fantastic. My experience was nothing even remotely like yours. I was at work. I was making delivery, and I got robbed by six kids, and I was beat up quite a bit, lost a couple of teeth. It was about 7 years ago. And right now, I mean, I've been diagnosed with PTSD. I have the headaches basically daily. And really, unfortunately, about the only thing they've been able to do for me is just treat me. And that I don't know if they just don't understand the root cause or if there's even anything that can be done about it. But as far as right now, I'm just taking medication for the headaches, and I go to therapy usually 2 to 4 times a month. And I, you know, at this point, I'm just kind of at a loss 7 years out. I really haven't gotten any better. I don't know what I can do.
You know, I think there's a lot is being learned about TBI, for example. I mean, certainly in a war, so many people have survived by these kinds of explosions that didn't survive in previous wars. So a lot of them did not survive and then needed help when they came back. And certainly it's been a long time since a war like this where so many explosions have happened. But there have been about 1.5 million Americans in this country that have had some problem with the TBI, and there are doctors around the hospitals around the country that know something about it. But even still, a lot needs to be learned about TBI, even those within this United States. And in that sense, you know, there's going to be in the future more help for those that have had problems like you've got.
Brian, as you watch the TV special, all of a sudden this looked awfully familiar to you, the same kind of injuries.
Well, in a way, I mean, but his was obviously much more severe than mine. But, yeah, and then just to see, you know, where he was at and how he came back is just remarkable. Hmm.
Well, Brian, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And let's introduce one of Bob Woodruff's doctors, Dr. Maria Moratidis, head of the Traumatic Stress and Brain Injury Program here at the National Naval Medical Center. Nice to have you on the program with us today.
Thank you for having us.
And just a simple question. What's the difference between, we know he got a great big honking wound in his head, but other than that, what's the difference between a concussion and TBI?
Well, those words should not necessarily be used interchangeably. Mm-hmm. Concussion is one feature, perhaps, of a traumatic brain injury. And most of what we know about traumatic brain injury or concussion comes from sports concussion or from car accidents. The kind of injury that Bob and many of our other service members are experiencing are blast injuries, which are more like pressure injuries to the brain, as opposed to an accident where your brain is slaps up against your skull,
mm-hmm.
this kind of blast injury causes a pressure injury to the brain. And many of our service members have what we call compound head injuries, because the blast may cause their Humvee to roll over. And so now you have basically two kinds of head injuries, one on top of another. And so recognizing that the brain injuries, depending on how they're acquired, how the person becomes injured, may have a different kind of different symptoms, different recovery pattern, and what have you.
But you don't have to have any external injury to have TBI.
You do not have to have any external visible injury. It's very much of an invisible injury.
And sometimes it doesn't manifest for a while.
It can take a while to become manifested, or the signs and symptoms might be much more subtle. For example, in a car accident, most people may complain of problems with memory. And any of us know if our memory's kind of off for a day, we sort of notice that. If your attention is not quite right, or your visual spatial skills are off, they may not be as readily apparent to you. And we see some of those differences in blast injury.
Mm-hmm. And when you first saw Bob, did you think he was going to be getting back on television and reporting the news?
One of the things I think that we've learned is it's very hard to predict. And so we've gotten out of the business of trying to guess. And certainly we've have good reason here to be very optimistic from the outcomes that we've seen over time. And although Bob was very, very severely injured, and certainly those first few weeks and month especially were filled with a lot of uncertainty, which is one of the things that is really challenging for family members,
mm-hmm.
because they're certainly looking to the entire medical staff to say, is he going to be able to do this? Is he going to be able to do that? And it's difficult to know early on. And so certainly we're all just overwhelmed with Bob's recovery, mm-hmm. and so pleased. And that recovery will continue, really, for quite some time.
Pleasantly surprised in his case, but
yes.
I suppose from time to time there are unpleasant surprises.
Certainly the recovery patterns are different, especially for blast injury. We really don't know down the line how much more people can recover.
Bob Woodruff and Dr. Mortitas, stay with us. We're going to continue taking questions and calls about TBI, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, broadcasting today from the Clark Auditorium at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. The hospital here treats many of the sailors, Marines wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's the only military facility that offers the most comprehensive treatment for wartime traumatic brain injury patients, TBI. This is also where ABC News correspondent Bob Woodruff was treated after a traumatic brain injury he suffered while reporting in Iraq in January 2006. His book about that experience is called In an Instant, A Family's Journey of Love and Healing. Also, one of his doctors is with us, Dr. Maria Moratidis. She's the head of the Traumatic Stress and Brain Injury Program here at the Bethesda Naval Hospital. We hope to hear from patients and their families, from medical staff here in the auditorium. We invite TBI survivors and their families listening on the radio to call in and share their experiences as well. Are you getting the help you need? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also see what other listeners are saying on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's get a question from here in the auditorium.
Hi, Neil. My name is Jackson Streeter. I'm wondering what new technologies or drugs might be in development for the acutely injured traumatic brain injury.
I think Dr. Mortitas, that's you.
Certainly, learning more about the early neurointerventional procedures that can be administered certainly as far forward as possible is an area of growing and great interest in research. Certainly here at the National Naval Medical Center, patients receive really state-of-the-art neurointerventional radiologies and treatments as soon as they arrive here, which it is almost unfathomable how quickly patients arrive here at our hospital, sometimes as early as 48 to 72 hours post-injury on the ground. So we are able to intervene with a variety of neuroanatomical, neurointerventional, neurosurgical approaches very early on after the injury.
Okay. Let's get a caller on the line now, and if this button will work. There we go. Chris. Chris with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a mild traumatic brain injury sustained in January of 05, and I was treated at Dodd Hall in Columbus. And I don't know if you know my doctor, but his name is Dr. Jerry Michu.
We're not getting any recognition here, but go ahead, Chris.
Good. But anyway, what is very hard for me is that I sustained my injury in January but did not receive any treatment until June. And during that time, I knew that there was something wrong, not only because I knew I had a concussion, because I hit my head, was diagnosed with post-concussion syndrome. 2 weeks later, was in a car accident, and I knew that there was something seriously wrong, but because they were both work-related and I was in the workers' comp system, I couldn't get treated because none of the doctors wanted to treat me because of workers' comp. But not having had a diagnosis of having a mild traumatic brain injury, I didn't know what was wrong. I looked okay, I sounded okay, but I had pain, I was photosensitive, I was having problems with memory, I couldn't read, I couldn't drive, and I felt insane. I thought there was something wrong with me. Mm. And because I looked okay and sounded okay, I thought people thought that I was faking. I couldn't work, and it was very hard. And until I actually got to see a doctor and to see a neuropsychologist and actually got affirmed that there was something wrong, I really thought that I was crazy.
Dr. Martinez, I see you nodding your head.
Was wonderful.
A lot of this sounds awfully familiar.
Yes, Chris, your experience is very consistent with what we see with traumatic brain injury, which was really the principal reason why here at the National Naval Medical Center we screen 100% of all of our returning service members for not only traumatic brain injury, but also for mental health symptoms or related problems, so that really the early diagnosis helps prevent something that we call secondary effects, mm-hmm. that we are able to identify who might be at risk for cognitive problems that may be related to a traumatic brain injury, so that, one, the patient and their family can be educated about it so that they don't walk around feeling badly about themselves or wondering why they're having difficulty doing things that previously came pretty easy to them, as well as start treatment as early as possible in the process, as well as in the conjunction of all the adjustment that it takes when you're recovering from a brain injury, so that you can resume as many of your normal activities as quickly as possible.
And Bob, I wanted to ask you about something else Chris was saying. She looks all right. People assume she is all right and somehow feels terribly guilty that she feels crazy and other people think she's jaking it.
No, I think, obviously, I've talked to so many who have been injured, not only from the war, but also just people in the country that have gone through this. And I could say that I've met several military guys and women who were not tested for TBI early on, I think until about 2005 when it really started seriously looked at. Because obviously this IED came a little bit later into this war, mm-hmm. and certainly was, you know, many of them. And so now they're starting to test people generally for TBI. And there's a lot of people still in this country that don't even understand TBI and may have fallen off the roof or got hit by a baseball bat and have what is technically some kind of either mild or traumatic brain injury, but they need to go test it at the doctor, and I think they're finally learning a lot more about it.
Can I ask another question or
comment?
Go ahead,
Chris, if you would. Yeah.
I need to take several medications a day. I'm now back and working, but only because, as I say, better living through drugs, but jokingly. And it may be too personal to ask, but Bob, is that one reason and one way that you're able to function is that you're taking medication as well?
No, actually, I've somehow gotten generally out of that. Except for one drug, generally they worry about potential for a seizure.
That's really okay.
The only thing that I need to take. There are various other drugs that are for different kinds of problems you've got in the mm-hmm. situation, obviously, but it hasn't really been a big issue for me.
Chris, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. We've got another question here in the audience at NNMC.
Yes, thank you. Lieutenant Chris Jolka, my question is for Bob Woodruff. Sir, I hope the answer to this is a positive one, but what is the impact, do you foresee, of this tragedy on your career?
Well, you know, it really depends on what I come back to do. You know, my job before was, a job that lasted about 27 days for me. And the last change that I did would become the anchor, which is, you know, largely live kind of reporting, like Neil's doing right now. You know, I can report. One of the things is that I can understand everything I see around me, and I can write about it. And sometimes I just have to get the word back. I need a thesaurus, for example, sometimes to make sure I can get it back. But generally, reporting as a reporter, which is I've always loved, I can now go back to that. I just got back from Cuba, for example, where I reported with some of my team, both my cameraman and sound man that was over in Iraq with me when we were hurt. We all returned for the first time last week back to Cuba. Mm. So we're back to reporting. So whether it goes generally is happening with the anchor job was still up in the air. But there is a good possibility that eventually people accept that I use the wrong words here and there, then I can get back. We just accept it as a country.
Thanks very much for the question. Let's see if we can introduce another guest here. And joining us now is Rear Admiral Adam Robinson. The military and the VA expect the cases of TBI to grow as long as troops are in combat. Rear Admiral Robinson is commander of the National Naval Medical Center. Chief of the Navy Medical Corps Commander Jim Dunn is also with us. He's a surgeon who also heads the trauma unit at the National Naval Medical Center here in the Clark Auditorium. And Admiral Robinson, we have to begin with you by thanking you as our host here. We appreciate the provision of this facility and all the help you've provided.
Thank you very much for coming.
I really wanted to follow up on the question that Chris asked us on the phone. Can the expertise that you have developed here at Bethesda be diffused throughout the country to civilian hospitals as well as military hospitals and veterans hospitals? Can the expertise that you've developed help people across the country?
I think that it can, and actually I think we have to, because as we're learning so much about traumatic brain injury, particularly as it relates to combat and IED and that blast mm-hmm. pressure injury, we need to get that forward. And we need to get it forward to the neuropsychologists and to the physicians and the providers that are in the community, because we expect the people who are injured to go back to these communities around the United States. So we need to get that information back. And they don't need the sports model any longer only mm-hmm. as the TBI model. They can now have another model, which we have discovered and which we have been working on here because of this particular conflict.
Why wasn't this injury recognized as such from previous conflicts?
Partially, I think it's because we didn't have the low mortality, and partially because of the acuity of many of the types of blasts that we're getting. It is a multifactorial thing that has come together to create either the perfect storm of lower mortality but increased morbidity, increased levels of wounding and acuity of wounding, that we are now more facile with keeping people alive, but also we're much better in making their quality of life better. So they're not just alive, they're actually coming back, and we're finding, and Dr. Mauritidis said this, and Jim Dunn can relay a story too, we don't try to predict any longer. I am a general surgeon, and I know a lot about surgery, and I came to this hospital 3 years ago. I would go through the intensive care units. I would say, well, I don't think that patient's going to make it, or I don't think this is going to happen. Jim would look over and say, sir, this is a different place. This is a different war. And in fact, that has come true. Mm. We cannot predict.
And when you say low mortality, it's just the number of men and women who are injured, a much greater proportion of them are surviving.
Correct. And there is mortality in the war,
sure.
and the mortality is reported every day. But the wounding is not reported every day, so there is a great percentage more wounds that people are actually surviving.
Yeah. Bob Woodruff, I was surprised in your piece. I mean, we were talking about the numbers of injured from this war, and it's 23,000 some, as you see. In fact, it seems to be a lot more than that.
Yeah, and if you compare other wars, I mean, the number I've always heard is in Vietnam, for example, was about 2.7 injured to those who were killed. Now you're really at least 16 to 1, probably even much more than that. A lot of it, as Admiral said, is because they're able to save lives so much better than in previous wars. In fact, many say that within 5 years ago, I probably would not have survived. Mm-hmm. If you look at Kimberly Dozier, for example, from CBS, because she lost so much of her blood, that they actually were able to stop the bleeding by a certain technique that they've got now. They say that about 2 years ago, she probably would not have made it through. So they're saving lives unbelievable, better than they ever did before. Part of that, a lot more injured are coming back to the country and need help.
So the number of those with TBI, Admiral Robinson, what do you think?
Well, I think that TBI is, first of all, it's. I do think that it is the signature injury of the war. But I also think that what is TBI is sometimes misunderstood, and here's what I mean. One caller today, I think, may have TBI, but he may also have post-traumatic stress disorder. Those are actually two distinctly different entities. You can certainly have them together, but they're not the same. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and that needs to be clarified from everyone. For example, the PTSD from the Vietnam era, which is an absolute real diagnosis, is a result of people who had the traumatic stress not identified and treated. So the chronic, the longevity of the chronicity of that particular traumatic stress disorder has been what has plagued us and has really been a treatment issue in that it's just been a chronic disease. We're trying to get a handle now on traumatic stress so that we can actually implement treatments early on for the beginning symptoms of the traumatic stress so that the post-traumatic stress disorder that we know doesn't actually establish itself.
We're talking about TBI, a traumatic brain injury, and we're at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Commander Dunn, I could see you trying to get in there. So go ahead.
No, I agree with everything the Admiral is saying.
Don't you always agree with everything the Admiral says?
Yes, sir.
That's just like with my wife, who's the general, you know, in my family.
We have learned so much about traumatic brain injury in the last 3 or 4 years. And you had brought up a question regarding how do we get that out to the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. From a medical perspective, the best way we can do that is through the medical literature, through publishing papers and writing papers and doing research. Now, we're not going to be able to do basic science or randomized controlled studies here, but what we can do is relay our experience to the journals, and that's really what we need to do, and that's what we are doing here at Bethesda. Mm-hmm. And then the other factor is education. Going out and informing the public and the rest of the country about this disease, because it's not a new disease. It's been there before. We're just learning more and more about it every day.
Let's get a question from the audience here at the Clark Auditorium.
Hi, my name is Robin Booten, and I just wanted to say that my son Nicholas and my husband were both in Iraq in August of 2005, and our son was injured. He lost his left eye, and he suffered a traumatic brain injury and had to learn to speak again when he left here in October of 2005 for rehab. He could only say "bah," and he had to learn to rewalk again, and he's had many procedures. But I really feel that if it wasn't for Dr. Armando, Dr. Dunn, and Dr. Perdue, that I don't know if we'd have him now. And so we're very grateful.
And I think, Bob Woodruff, I know you're grateful too, but in a way, your recovery makes it seem as if, well, you know, shouldn't everybody get better as good as you? And that's not always the case, is it?
Well, I think, you know, without any question, people get a little, you know, better. Not, you know, like I said, no doctor will say 100%. There's certain levels of what happens to people, but I know that there's been moments when I came in to see those who have been injured or back here in Bethesda, for example, and I just think them seeing you different than what they expected you to be gives them a little bit more hope. And I think the more that people get in there and see some of these families that are going through this, these military guys that are going through this, and just tell them there is some hope out there, because it can be very frightening in the beginning about what's going to ultimately, you know, happen to you. We're going to have issues for the rest of our lives. There's no question about it. But there is moments ago, and these people right here next to me are the ones that help save our lives. So,
We're going to talk more about the effect on families, but we have to take a short break. So hang in there. We're at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. If you'd like to join our conversation about traumatic brain injury, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, and a broadcast today from the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Here are headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. Six foreign-born Muslims have been arrested for plotting an attack on the Fort Dix Army Post in New Jersey. Prosecutors say the men plan to kill as many soldiers as possible in an attack with mortars, rocket-propelled grenades, and guns. And former enemies representing opposite sides of the political spectrum launched a new power-sharing government in Northern Ireland today. Hardline unionists who want Northern Ireland to continue to be part of Britain and hardline Republicans who support a united Ireland pledged to work together for peace and stability. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, our regular Wednesday visit with Ken Rudin, our political junkie. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Right now, back to our conversation about traumatic brain injury, or TBI, and its causes, its treatment, and its recovery. By Pentagon estimates, more than 1,800 troops have been treated for brain injuries. Another 150,000 may have suffered some kind of brain trauma. And then Bethesda Naval Hospital has pioneered treatment of TBI. We have a number of patients and medical staff with us here in the auditorium. Also with us, Bob Woodruff, ABC News correspondent, who suffered TBI while reporting in Iraq in 2006. Rear Admiral Adam Robinson, the commander of the National Naval Medical Center and Chief of the Navy Medical Corps, Commander Jim Dunn, who heads the trauma unit here at the Bethesda Naval Hospital, and also with us, Dr. Maria Moratitis, who's head of the Traumatic Stress and Brain Injury Program here at the hospital. We'll try to get through that all. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. We're also going to take questions from the audience here in Bethesda, and why don't we try going to the microphone?
Well, thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm Captain Mary Beth Neal. I'm a staff member here at the National Naval Medical Center. And my question is for Bob. I was wondering what the most significant, if there was just one, the most significant contribution your family, friends, and colleagues made to your recovery.
You know, I'll always remember the moment when I finally woke up after this coma that lasted about 36 days. You know, I came in on January 29th, and I didn't wake up here in the hospital until March 6th. Or fifth, I can't remember now. But I just seeing my family again, even though there was pain, even though there was confusion, my inability to name a lot of their names, I couldn't say any names of the countries or the states in this country, but I saw my family around me, and I think just having a moment like that is a big difference. You know, one of the unfortunate things is there are sometimes here and there somebody who is injured but don't have the ability to have their family come and see them, and I think there's a difference. If there's anything that anybody else that come and visit those that are injured, I think would only be helpful. The more people of the country, they go see those families, not even coming here in the hospital, but once they go home around the country, to come out and see them and help them, I think would be good for their recovery. I think that's a big difference.
Dr. Moratitis, let me follow up. I know sometimes you have to talk to family members to explain that their loved one has had this kind of injury and what it can do to them. And what kind of questions do they have? What do they want to know? And what do you have to tell them to prepare them?
Family members are engaged with a member from our traumatic stress and brain injury team really from the moment they arrive at the National Naval Medical Center. And we start building that relationship right from the very moment. So, for example, even though when Bob came, he wasn't conscious, we immediately started developing a relationship with his family the same way we do with every other family that comes through our hospital to help provide education, support, and also intervention as needed throughout their stay here, because caring for the patient at this hospital means caring for the family at the very same time. And part of that is providing education about traumatic brain injury, about helping to address some of their concerns, like, will he know me? Will he remember me? Will he be the same kind of person? Will he be the husband that I know? Will he be the son that I know? And those are all natural questions to have. And certainly, we help, based on each individual case, as we start to understand what the particular nature or the symptoms of the injury that the particular service member has, of what the potential implications are for their recovery, and really working with the whole family to be part of the recovery process and help with all the adjustments that may need to happen. For example, roles may change in the family. The wife might have more of a sort of an active role in some areas of the family that previously the husband used to have. Or parenting issues, again, where your 19-year-old son might need to come home for a while and need the support of his family through the recovery process. So really educating also about the process of recovery is not sort of a straight line. There's sometimes setbacks, that's to be expected. Sometimes there's rapid gain, there's certain areas, like for example in Bob's recovery, all of a sudden there's a sort of a dramatic increase or an improvement that was unexpected in a particular area. That doesn't necessarily mean that the patient or the person won't continue to recover. There's tremendous more hope now for traumatic brain injury perhaps than previously.
You know, it's true also, Neil, that when Maria came, when Lee was asking questions about what was happening to me, she would slowly start telling her some information, and Lee would then want to hear more. And this is something I think that Maria would ask generally of these families, do you want to hear more? I got some more. And you have to just judge the people that you're talking to. Can they take it?
Yeah. So many people these days turn for help to the web to get information. Are there places they can go to find information about TBI?
Certainly, there are a variety of websites. Of course, in general, with being a good consumer of the information on the World Wide Web, it needs to be very careful about what sites that patients and families are gaining information. The Brain Injury Association of America has a website. The CDC, the Center for Disease Controls, has information on traumatic brain injury on their website. So certainly being, and every usually every state has a brain injury association as well. So being a critical consumer of the information out there on the web is important. And also, you know, recognizing that it's not a one-size-fits-all for traumatic brain injury, that different families will go through different parts of the process and have different needs, and really identifying the strengths of the person and their family and helping to work with those strengths really helps with the recovery.
Admiral Robinson, let me ask you, is the military medical system ready to deal with the scope of this problem? And as you look out, as we look ahead, is the Veterans Administration system ready to deal with it? Is the civilian system ready to deal with it?
I think from the military health system, the MHS, which includes Army, Navy, Air Force, we in fact are dealing with it. The first way that we're dealing with it is it's family-centered care, and one of the signature differences in how we care for patients in this war and was not done in prior wars has been that we have included families at the very beginning. So we bring families here. Often families will arrive here before the wounded member will get here. And that relationship that Dr. Mortitis said occurs with Marine liaison and with our casualty liaison. More specifically to the TBI question, we were designated as the head injury site for DOD early on, and we then take all of the traumatic brain injured patients here. And what we have learned has been so rapid, and it has been a large amount, that we are trying to get that information out as quickly as we can to Veterans Affairs hospitals. And in fact, we are in daily conversation with many of the polytrauma units around the country in the VA system. And additionally, and this is very important, at the end of the day, most people will not spend the rest of their lives here or in a VA hospital. They'll go back to their communities, which is where they should be. And so we need to get the information to them, to the providers in those communities, as I said earlier, to make sure that they understand what traumatic brain injury is as we define it through this pressure concussive blast injury pattern.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, I know that your documentary that you did, you raised a lot of questions about the readiness of some of those more far-flung facilities to cope with this question.
I think what you've got is you've got a lot of these families that have gotten this amazing medicine help while they're in a place like here. And then they have to go back to their home, to a VA, for example, that may has never really dealt recently, at least, with any kind of TBI or what they're suffering from. But there might be a hospital that's very close to them that has actually dealt with TBI because somebody there domestically in this country may have been in a car accident or been beaten up or anything like that. And so why wouldn't they just be allowed to go to those private hospitals until the VA learns as much as they know about that problem? It seemed to be relatively straightforward. And I think that's one of the things we're working through on now.
All right. See if we get another caller on the line, and let's go to Overland Park in Kansas. With us is Scott. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Neil. You always have a great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Woodruff, my heart goes out to you. And Dr. Maria, you're doing a good job. But I think the family thing is probably the most important thing to bring up here, because if they don't understand the injury, like the person that was injured or the doctors that have advised them about it, you keep trying to muddle through each day and survive all the circumstances that's there. So you guys are doing a great job. The family, my family is helping out huge, and all my friends. And they're not nearly as knowledgeable as the doctors that I see. But thank you so much for bringing this to the point for everybody in the country to hear. Thank you.
Scott, hang in there, okay? You're going to be all right.
Well, it's tough, Neil, but I think that the most important thing is that I probably speak for hundreds, maybe thousands of people that are going through it, and each day is a struggle. Yeah. But more than anything, the families are what have helped me through most of this, and the good friends. And I hope that's the same for Bob and all the people that are out there that are going through this too.
Thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you, Scott.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, let me reintroduce our guests here in the National Naval Medical Center Clark Auditorium. Bob Woodruff of ABC News, Dr. Maria Moratitis, the head of the Traumatic Stress and Brain Injury Program here, Rear Admiral Adam Robinson, who's in charge of everything here, and Commander Jim Dunn is also with us, the head of the Trauma Unit at the National Naval Medical Center. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a question from here in the audience.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Agaston. I work at a medical school right next to the National Naval Medical Center, and my lab is working on TBI research. And I'm so glad, Mr. Woodruff, to see you here and see you doing so well.
Thank you.
And I want to ask, and I want to emphasize that the recovery and the miracle, if you like, that's hard work of thousands of people, researchers, and physicians. And what you received is an accumulation of those efforts. And my question is, do you plan to do any advocacy for TBI research, raising the alertness, raising the public support and funding for TBI research?
It is certainly one of the steps along the way to try to learn more about this. I mean, I think just having mentioning the letters TBI has actually taught a lot of people that there is such a thing in this country, which I think so many people didn't know. I have to tell you honestly, 15 months ago, I had never heard of it in my life. And I think that's probably technically around the country. We have this immediate issue that's very big right now, which are those soldiers, Marines that are coming back from this war with relatively newly learned about, which is TBI in this kind of situation with an IED, for example. There is also, like we said, this 1.5 million in this country, they get the same kind of issue that a lot of people haven't paid attention to before. I was actually out in Chicago and I saw, for example, some of the fMRI kind of machines that are x-rays and things that are looking at this situation. We're learning more about the brain than we did before. There just hasn't been enough concentration on what is going on in the brain. I mean, I've been explained to by so many here sitting with me, my friends, that, for example, in my brain, It used to be there was one little flash in my brain that my thoughts in my brain would go through that then out of my mouth. Now it's really probably more like 15 different sparks up there in my brain that they're going through. And so instead of me driving from here in Washington up I-95 right to New York, that now is cut off in different places. Now I got to go to this road over here and then 62 over here and then 375 over that way. And eventually I'll get back. You know, I know that. And there's some times when those little sparks go off and then I can't think of the word. And all this is being learned about this, and you guys are doing the study on it. Once we get really concentrating on helping these that have been injured, I think we also need to get a lot of people concentrating more on the science of this. I think it's fascinating.
You are diving on I-95, actually.
Maybe it's opening up a little bit.
Well, and that's bringing up the issue about treatment. And one of the things that is important to understand about treatment of brain injury is that, for example, our approach here is working on restoration of function and compensation of function. So, for example, while you might have I-95 taken out right now, the compensation is to help you find alternate roadways to get to where you need to go as we're working to help reopen I-95, mm-hmm. so you can get to where you need to get to. And that's really an innovation in brain injury rehabilitation, in that we're not just sort of handing Bob or another patient a calendar and telling him to make a list to help remember things. We're actually working on how do we restore brain function. And that is a wide open area at this point, and certainly one of the major treatment approaches that we use here.
Commander Dunn, could you tell us a little bit about, we just have a little bit of time left, but how much have we learned about this in the past couple of years?
A lot. We have, even in the beginning of 2003, during the assault phase, we knew, we didn't really even know how to adequately screen people, to be quite honest with you. Since that time, we have now really, I think, cracked the nut on how to screen and effectively identify these individuals coming back from the war. And we're now getting that information out to other hospitals, to other units, to the point where now people are being screened in field, on the field. Right after a bomb goes off, they're being screened to determine whether or not they have TBI. Mm-hmm. Or from the neurocritical care standpoint, we're really learning a lot about secondary brain injury. We can't do much about the initial brain injury, but the secondary effects, low blood pressure, hypoxia, things like that can cause secondary damage, and how to prevent that. I think we're really at the forefront of trying to figure that out and how to diagnose those things early so that we can save as much brain tissue as possible. And Dr. Armand really has been at the forefront of that.
Well, thank you all very much. And again, thanks for the questions from here in the audience and from those who called in as well. Our guests, you just heard Commander Jim Dunn, MD, the head of the trauma unit at the National Naval Medical Center. Also with us, Rear Admiral Adam Robinson, the commander of the National Naval Medical Center, himself also a medical doctor. Dr. Maria Moratitis, head of the Traumatic Stress and Brain Injury Program here at Bethesda, and Bob Woodruff, correspondent for ABC News. We thank you all very much. Today's broadcast was produced by Susan Lund and Becky Villamas, our engineers Kim Jones and Neil Ellis. We'd like to thank the entire staff at the Bethesda Naval Hospital for allowing us to broadcast from their facility, especially Brian Badura, Ellen Crown, and Rear Admiral Robinson, the commander of the National Naval Medical Center. I'm Neil Conan in Bethesda, and this is NPR News.